morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want to listen to it, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking to a person named Zhizhen Dai, who is from China and is the subject of a film called Plum Blossom in Snow that is screening once more this week at the Center for Contemporary Arts. Right now, I would like to welcome David Crystal. He is part of a performance called The Testosterone Testimonials, which is happening this next weekend, May 24th, at the James A. Little Theater at 7:30. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. Very nice to be here.
Thank you. Now, this is an evening inspired by Eve Ensler's Vagina Monologues. How did the process of this performance taking shape? How did it all get started?
Well, I am the vice president of the board for the Santa Fe Rape Crisis and Trauma Treatment Center. And Barbara Goldman, the executive director, who has been very involved with V-Day and the Vagina Monologues, came up with this idea. And she asked me if I would produce it for the center as a fundraiser. So that's actually how it came about. And she and I, along with the rest of the committee members, were talking about titles. And Barbara came up with this great title, The Testosterone Testimonials. And then I came up with The Measure of a Man as our subtitle. And there you have it. That is the program.
And so what's it all about? I mean, the Vagina Monologues was this, at the time, really groundbreaking moment of women put together by the artist Eve Ensler talking about things that they had just never talked about in public anymore, namely their sexuality in many manifestations. What about this? This is also about sexuality in the same way?
To a degree, the point here of having the male version of the Vagina Monologues is to expand the dialogue about, for, and by men by both genders. For many people, men are seen in a very small box. They're described that way.
What do you mean by that?
Well, in terms of the Rape Crisis and Trauma Treatment Center, men are seen in a very small box, generally as perpetrators of sexual violence or violence in general. I would like, and Barbara would like, to change that perception. The only way to do that is to give people an understanding of just the full spectrum that a man can provide. And so it's not just about sex. It's about how a man fits in society, in American society specifically. So we have a gentleman who's going to be one of our presenters. He's very short. So he will talk about what it's been like growing up short in American society, how he's perceived, how he was treated by other people. We have another person who is transgendered. Now that's going to, for a lot of people, be a real stretch mentally and emotionally. His story is exceptional. We have a 19-year-old, very involved in gangs for a while, was going down a specific track, and then he turned his life around. So part of this is creating and presenting new role models so people see that men really have a full range of emotions and personality characteristics that they can put out there.
Now, in terms of the context of the Rape Crisis Center, I can see how men are seen as perpetrators, but in greater society, surely it's not quite so limited.
Well, one would perceive that, and one might think that that is the case, but when you talk with people, it's interesting how we can be perceived and described publicly. If you look at a lot of the media, men do come across it very specifically, and we want to help expand that. And then for the purposes of the Rape Crisis and Trauma Treatment Center, in a sense, we would like to be put out of business one day. The only way that's going to happen is if men become an integral part of the dialogue. And right now, we don't get enough men coming into the center to be a part of that.
So in the testosterone testimonials, are you taking on the nightmare of rape?
Not specifically. There will be some discussion about sexuality and violence, but not specific to rape and domestic violence or anything like that.
We're being joined by another person who is part of the testosterone testimonials. You are?
Benny Shendo, Jr.
Benny Shendo. Now, you have become part of this as a presenter. How did you get involved in this project?
I was asked by Barbara if I could participate in this because I feel that initially the whole discussion was around domestic violence. And I really feel that this is not just a women's issue. This is also a men's issue. And I felt that I could reflect on my own upbringing as a Native American man, growing up in a family of five sisters and very influential in our matrilineal society of what that means for a young man to grow up in our Pueblo community.
What Pueblo did you grow up in?
Jemez Pueblo.
And so what was it like to be part of a, would you call it a matriarchal society?
It is. You know, most indigenous communities are matrilineal, where the clanship that you take is your mother's. And that in itself will determine a lot of times sort of your place in society. And of course, growing up with very strong sisters and mother and grandmothers and aunts, you know, it really made a big influence on who I am today as a man.
We're talking about the performance that is happening this weekend, the 24th of May, at the James Head Little Theater called The Testosterone Testimonials, The Measure of a Man. So tell us more about that. I mean, if your mother's lineage determines your place in society, what does that mean for you?
Well, you know, it's not enough time to go into all the details, but I think a lot of times, my mother's clanship basically would determine where my role might be, you know, as I grow up as a man in our particular societies and so forth. So, I think, you know, before European contact, you know, a lot of what we had in our communities were very balanced between, you know, the masculine and the feminine. But with the European contact, that all changed to a really, you know, Eurocentric governance that we have today in terms of a governor, a first lieutenant, a second lieutenant. And I think a lot of tribes are struggling with that because that's very foreign to what, you know, our own indigenous outlook is in terms of the role of a man and a woman in our society. It has to be balanced.
What is the role of a man and a woman in your society?
Well, I mean, again, this is not, you know, I think...
It's just so interesting because, I mean, one of the things we talk about in the imbalance of this crazy world in which we live, everybody's looking for models elsewhere, mm-hmm. of a more healthy balance. But then, you know, people want separate roles. They don't want separate roles. What are the separate roles?
You know, I think in today's contemporary society, I think we struggle with that because in today's society, you know, the women also, you know, want, you know, to have careers, to be able to, you know, to do things that I think contemporary women do. But also I think in our own indigenous communities, there's also a role of women and men, you know, for a purpose to have that balance throughout, you know, creation for our lives. And you know, there's, again, this is not probably, you know, the... enough time to really get into the depth of what that means. And I think, you know, but those of us that grow up in it and understand the inherent nature of our lives and our connection to not only, you know, the natural world, but also to the world around us, I think we'll have a much better understanding of where I'm coming from. But those that are new, you know, might take a while to understand.
And that is also part of the point of the testosterone testimonials, is to present models. So what will happen in the performance is that as each man gets up to present his monologue, we will project on a giant screen that person's name and a list of four or five of their role models. So we'll see role models from the past. We'll see that the 15 men on stage are role models right before our eyes. That gives people permission in the audience to realize that they can be a role model too.
Who do you think are some positive role models that you carry and that men in the, I guess this is sort of part of the men's movement, this whole testosterone testimonials.
It is, and one thing about the men's movement is so much of it has been really out of the public eye. We want to really bring that into the public dialogue.
So, yeah, they go out in the woods and beat drums and scream and yell.
Put on war paint and all that sort of stuff, and they bemoan the fact that they didn't have a great relationship with their father. Okay, that is part of our evolution, but we need to go beyond that now, I feel. And, of course, as Benny was just saying, it's about integration between both genders and then how that works out in our communities and in our nation and then in the rest of the world. So where was I going with this? I just forgot.
We're talking about the testosterone testimonials. Well, the question was the question of role models. Who do you think are some positive role models?
Well, I would like Benny to answer this first, and then I'll go ahead and give some of my role models.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I think, of course my role models were my parents,
But I mean in terms of male role models.
Male role models, so certainly my dad, my grandparents. Nelson Mandela, when I was an undergraduate, we did a lot of work in our university in terms of divestment in South Africa and the plight of the people there. And for him to come out of that without an ounce of bitterness was probably an extraordinary act of reconciling for the people of South Africa, and so he's one of my role models. I think John F. Kennedy, when I was growing up, it was very interesting. I didn't know who he was because I was, born in 64, but in many places in my village that I went, there was always this picture of this gentleman, and I didn't quite know what it was until later on when I began to understand who he was and what he meant to the people. And I think he became one of those, read his book, Profiles in Courage, and really began to think about what he represented, to the world. And then, of course, Martin Luther King Jr. and what he stood for in terms of the civil rights movement.
What about you, David Crystal?
For me, I have four very specific role models. First one would be Gene Kelly. I'm a retired dancer from New York, and Gene's physicality was something that appealed to me tremendously. Another is Leonard Bernstein. Years ago, he did something called Young Children's Music Programs. And when I saw films of this as a child, I was so entranced with what he was providing for an understanding about music. And then little did I know that I would actually get to work with him at the Kennedy Center in 1981. So that was a dream come true. Another one of my role models is Sidney Poitier. When I saw him in his early films, I was so amazed at who this individual was. And then reading about him, realizing that this man had tremendous character. He still does, and he has a new book coming out right now. But what's interesting is that the title of his autobiography is The Measure of a Man, A Spiritual Journey. So I see this as a great tie-in. I think it's important that everyone understand that our role models don't have to be gender specific. One of my first role model is a fabulous woman who was the first woman to ever win 3 gold medals in the Olympics, and this was in 1960. And this woman had polio as a child. I had polio as a child. And in 1960, when I saw her, I just said, if she can do it, I can do it. Fabulous woman. So I think everyone needs to understand that role models come in many different shapes and sizes in both genders.
Years ago, I met a little 4-year-old boy and asked him who his favorite hero was, and he said Wonder Woman. And his mother looked a little taken aback.
it gets into perceptions, who are we going to be as we grow up? And someone like Wilma Rudolph, who I was just speaking of, for me, it didn't matter which gender she was. It's what she stood for and what she had accomplished in her life.
Well, and you had something very, very serious in common.
Yes. So, and I think all of us, if we think about it, like Benny with him, it's, part of his lineage is the effect that that his grandparents had on shaping him as a man today, right? So that's why I think it's important that we see all of this as an integrated, holistic process.
So we're talking about the testosterone testimonials, and there's, a dozen different people who have written monologues for this?
We have 15 men ranging in age from 19 to 80. We have an 80-year-old rabbi who just turned 80 in April. And the idea was to present diversity. So 15 sounded like a good number. Each person gets 5 minutes to present their monologue. They have each written their own monologue. We wanted this to be as immediate and as real and diverse as possible. The only way to do that was to have each man write his own dialogue.
Now, did the director take a role in shaping that and crafting it with the presenters, who are presumably not professional writers or playwrights?
We presented ours, and then he basically asked us, he didn't really get into, cut and slash, and just told us what we needed to, because it's going to be, we're not going to be reading our monologues. We're going to actually be talking about it. So just to make sure that we highlight those things that we want to get across within 5 minutes, because some of us, wrote 10 minutes. but to cut it down to so that we can really get those points across.
I think one of the things that comes up with all of this is the questions of what is masculinity and what is femininity, and when you really look at it closely, nobody really knows.
Exactly, and that's part of why I think we have so much confusion in society today. People are struggling so for identity, and we can help in that process by expanding people's perceptions of each other. Eventually, what I would like to do with this monologue series, I've had people already ask me, are you going to take this to Broadway? And I've actually figured out a way we could do it on Broadway to keep it fresh and alive.
Put tap shoes on every...
Not quite. Yeah, we'll have a kick line, which would be up my alley, but no. But the idea here is... Ask your question again.
How would you take it? You've had people ask you how you could take it to Broadway, and if you're going to take it to Broadway.
Well, that is something that we could do. What I would like to do is produce a book, a how-to book, where communities can buy this book. They'll have a DVD of the actual performance. Then they can produce their own version of the testosterone testimonials using the people from their community, so there's a greater connection amongst community members. I don't want for some outsiders, so to speak, to come in and they do their show and maybe there's some celebrity or something. I want this to be as real for the people in the audience as possible. So that's why we chose so many people from the Santa Fe area to come in and do this, is because there are community members that people will recognize. You have your family, your friends come to this, and people just in the community whom you don't know, they're going to know who you are now.
The Vagina Monologues, which is it's an incredible work of art, was written by E. Venzler. There's tons of material in it is taken from interviews and conversations with other women, but she then crafted those into one long monologue, which then eventually was performed by different people, but the content stayed the same. And the content is very powerful. Are you talking about, when you put this out there, using the Santa Fe content, or having each new community use new content, write their own monologues?
For me, the only way this is going to stay fresh and immediate is if each community that puts on their version of the testimonials writes their own, so it does not become stale. And we want as many perceptions brought into play as possible. We can't do that if everybody's doing just 15 perceptions. It's going to box it in. So everybody has their own life experience, their own journey that I'm sure they would like to share, and other people would like to hear. Storytelling is a part of our society. It's a part of many cultures, and it has a profound effect on people. That's another part of modeling.
Now, what has this, I'd like to ask each of you, what has participating in this done for you?
Given me a lot of gray hairs. It's been a lot of work, but it's been a very exciting process for me. Even though I'm not going to be one of those individuals presenting a monologue, I'm the producer. I can't do both.
Yeah.
I want other people to have the opportunity to express themselves. I do plenty of public speaking already. Let other people get in there and do their part.
Benny Shendo, what about you? Crafting a monologue and then getting ready to put it out on stage. What's that process been like?
It's been fun, and just really thinking about what you want to put out there so that people can do walk away feeling, and I guess the anxiety of this is a first time, so it's like I don't know what the other 14 monologues are going to be.
Oh, you don't? You haven't rehearsed together?
No, no. So I don't know. And so how my monologue is going to fit in with everybody else's. And that's the excitement of it, because I think it's going to probably all come together in some way or form and fashion. And certainly that, you know, my monologue hopefully will contribute, at least from a Native perspective, of what it means for me and the influence that I had as growing up to who I am today, and so forth. And so it that's the exciting part. And sometimes I think about, wow, you know, it's going to be exciting. I think it's going to be a fun evening.
I have to say, I find it sort of amusing that you have all these men who are working together and they haven't even heard each other's monologues. If this were women doing it, they would have sat around in a circle and read them to each other 15 times.
Well, that has happened in men's circles also, but what I wanted to make sure was that the monologues that are presented are truly individual. I had some of the men ask me if they could read some of the other men's monologues before they wrote their own. I did not want those other monologues to color what this individual might write and express. So our first rehearsal with everybody is this Friday, the day before the performance. That's when they're going to get a chance to meet each other, hear each other's monologues, and get a sense of what this show is actually going to provide.
So we're talking about the Testosterone Testimonials, which is this coming weekend, the 24th of May. That's Saturday night.
It's Saturday night from 7:30 to 9:30.
At the James A. Little Theater. And it's a fundraiser for the Santa Fe Rape Crisis Center and Trauma Treatment Center. For tickets, you can call 988-1951. The first 20 veterans who call to reserve a seat get in free.
Yes.
And also, any woman who brings 3 paying men with her, it gets in free. Why?
Well, when we first began discussing the testosterone testimonials, I was very concerned that more women would show up than men to the performance. And as I said earlier in the show, it is very important that men become a part of this dialogue. So this is one way to get them, if they're brought in dragging and screaming, at least they're brought in. And so they get to hear what other men have to say, and that it is not something frightening, it's actually expanding.
So all of this coming Saturday night, and I would like to say a great thank you to David Crystal and Benny Shendo for being with us here today on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break right now, and we'll be right back. Stay tuned to KSFR. I'd like now to welcome Chichen Dai. She is the subject of a film which is being screened at the Center for Contemporary Arts this Wednesday at 6:30 in the afternoon. And Sarah Effner, who is a practitioner of Falun Gong, which we're about to talk about here on the Radio Cafe, and the beautiful daughter of Chichen Dai. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's talk about, this is an extraordinary movie and an extraordinary experience that you had, Chichen. Falun Gong is a form of Qigong which was introduced to China in 1992. What is it, and how did you come in contact with it?
Yeah, Falun Gong is a self-cultivation, improve body and mind. And it's an ancient practice for 1,000 years. They passed on by generation to generation in private. But the founder wanted to benefit the whole world, so in 92, he made it public.
I thought it was thousands of years old. The founder being...
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Can you explain?
Yes, Li Hongzhi is the founder of Falun Gong. He learned the practice that was passed down through the ages, and he made it public, for public use. And it involves slow-moving Qigong exercise, and teachings that are based on truthfulness, compassion, and tolerance. And basically, it's just something that anybody can take and learn to improve themselves. It's not an organized religion of any kind. It's just, a way to improve the body and mind.
The way that people do Tai Chi or do Qigong or whatever, or yoga.
Yes, and the teachings themselves are very profound, and people found by improving their heart, looking inside, and giving up their attachments, you know, not being angry when wronged, for example. A lot of people's diseases went away in China and went through doing the practice. And eventually it grew to be 70 to 100 million people practicing it in China.
Now, your father-in-law had kidney disease, and it was cured by Falun Gong?
Yeah, the Western doctor and Chinese doctor say he waiting for die. And at that time in Guangzhou, before they call Canton, next to Hong Kong, and a lot of all kind of qigong, and all these qigong require money, except Falun Gong is free. So we think, oh, we pay more money to the teacher, then he can teach you secret thing, then you can survive. But it doesn't work. We try all kinds of qigong, it doesn't work. Until one day, his neighbor give him Zhuan Fa Lun. Then he study at home and do the exercise in the park. In Guangzhou at that time, all public park, you can see people do the exercise. All the university, you can see people do the exercise. And no membership. And 3 months later, he went to the hospital, he did the checkup. Everything is normal. So because my husband's parents work in Guangzhou Paper Manufacturing Corporation, there's more than 10,000 staff working in that company. And it belongs to the central government, not belong to Guangzhou City. So because my husband's parents worked there for 33 years, everybody know this family. So a lot of people started practice, include my husband, my husband's sister. And yesterday, we are in the human rights torture relay, there's a lady, Carol, she said, can you tell her story?
Carol, Jane just now is just trying to show how Falun Gong spread so quickly in China, just through the companies and families that just spread the word. And one of our friends from Denver had MS for 30 years, and she was losing her eyesight and having difficulty walking, dangerously thin, when she found the practice of Falun Dafa and the principles of truthfulness, compassion, tolerance, which she was really drawn to. And she took up the practice, and in 6 months, she was completely healthy. She's been healthy ever since. That's been 7 years ago. She came and spoke yesterday at the Human Rights Torch Relay at the plaza.
So the human rights aspect of this is very serious and horrifying, which is that in 1999, Falun Gong was banned in China. Why? I mean, it had 70 or more million practitioners that, according to the film, spanned every stratum of society. Yes. There were policemen and business people and kids and adults doing it. Why did they ban it?
You pretty much, one of the reasons, one thing you just mentioned is that, you know, we have no membership, but the government, when they saw how popular Falun Gong was becoming, they did a survey and discovered that there were 70 to 100 million people. And then before that, they had been very supportive, and because it reduced their health care cost. But when they learned that it was that many, before that they never said anything bad about Falun Gong, but when they learned it was that many, they started to put false reports in the media, and gradually it became something they decided to ban, because Falun Gong practitioners would come forward and speak up for the truth in when something was wrong in the media. And so it escalated to the point of banning, because they thought
it was a threat to the government,
because it was so 100 million people
interested in truth, or just because it was so many people.
Right, 100 million people is more than there are in the Chinese Communist Party, and they don't allow freedom of belief. We believe in truthfulness, compassion, and tolerance. They persecute other, you know, beliefs as well.
Yeah. Since they invade China, first they take away all the land, they kill all the landlord, include 10 days baby of the landlord. If you can check this, you're on Night Commentary on Communist Party, this book, it document what they did these 56 years. They kill 80 million Chinese citizens in the peaceful 56 years. It's more than First World War and Second World War people die. And they persecute Christian, Catholic, Tibetan, Buddhism, Taoism, now persecute Falun Gong. My parent generation, they bow down survival. When I, at my daughter's age, we go to the market, I saw all the dead body hang up on the tree. It's the Cultural Revolution, meaning family was broken down. When we go to the school, they teach us the communism is your mother. If the communism don't like your own mother, you have to against your own mother. So in Cultural Revolution, meaning children against their parent, a lot of parents suicide. Yeah, so it's not certainly persecuted. And also, at that time in China, 7 top people, 6 against this persecution. Only the dictator Jiang Zemin, he got the power since 1989 massacre. You know, they killed all the students in Tiananmen Square with 10 and gun. But the Chinese media said nobody died on the massacre. Last week, I met 2 students in Albuquerque University, and they from China. They don't know Tiananmen massacre. They changed the history.
Yeah, the young people in China don't know anything about the June 4th massacre, because the government has covered it up.
Yeah. And so the Cultural Revolution is this nightmare, which I suppose many of us think was in the past, but then there was this persecution of Falun Gong practitioners, including your own husband. Tell us his story.
Yeah, because we benefit so much. So my husband just simply went to Beijing and hand a letter on the appeal center, Chinese government office.
Saying, please don't ban this practice because it's so...
They said Falun Gong is good, stop the persecution because our whole family benefits so much. Then he was arrested by 610 office. Can you explain 610 office?
610 office was set up solely to persecute Falun Gong. They're above the law. They go into their houses and kidnap them, ransack their houses, arrest them, send them to labor camps. It's just a police organization in China set up to persecute Falun Gong.
This office not only working in mainland China, they working around the world. In 2005, the Chinese defector Chen Yonglin, he come out to speak. He worked in Chinese consulate for 4 years in Sydney. And he mentioned, the 610 office ordered him how to persecute our Australian citizen in Australian free soil. And
how to persecute Australian citizens in Australia?
Yeah.
Why?
They extend this persecution around the world, including America, this free soil.
So, in other words, Chinese people who have emigrated or
all of them, even the Western people.
Yes, we receive phone calls with propaganda against Falun Gong or threats.
So did that happen to you, Sarah?
Yeah. Yes, and the Falun Gong spokeswoman in New York has had her apartment broken into several times by, hired by the Chinese communist regime through the embassy.
I mean, it seems... Your husband ended up dying from the persecution. He was taken away three times and eventually was tortured and killed.
Yes. And all these Falun Gong practitioner killed is not listed on the execution. So last week we screening this documentary on the Albuquerque Center, Peace and Justice Center. The amnesty want us to sign the petition against the execution. I let them see the whole picture. All Falun Gong people was killed. It's not listed on the execution. My husband was killed. It's not listed on the execution. So, Minion family, just like mine, they don't have a chance to speak out. And thousands of children suffering, just like my daughter. They tear, nobody see, their voice, nobody heard. My husband's sister was sentenced 2 years in labor camp without child. And she could not see her 9-year-old daughter. And my husband's father died after 2 months after my husband was killed. He was shot, his son was killed, his daughter in jail. Then my daughter and I fled from China. And we was blocked on the airport. In Guangzhou Airport, when I hand Australian passport there, we are on blacklist. So they took away my Australian passport. I was so frightened because one of my friends, a baby boy, just 1 month older than my daughter, and he was killed with the mother. They hand up upside down 8 months baby in front of the mother to force the mother to sign the paper with Nancy Falun Gong until the baby killed. The mother was killed too. The first thought in my mind, I was like, what they do to my baby, And all the mothers think the same thing. I waited 1 minute, just like 1 year, until the boarding announcement didn't let me get on the airplane. Yeah.
So you actually have Australian citizenship, which allowed you to leave in a way that other people might not have had the freedom to do.
Yeah. If I only hold Chinese passport, we'll end up like my friend. And nobody know what happened to us.
We're talking to Shichen Dai and Sarah Effner. The film is called Plum Blossom in Snow. It's about an hour long, and it's screening this Wednesday, the 21st of May, at 6:30 at the Center for Contemporary Arts in Santa Fe. So, this is a story that I'm surprised that... is that not correct?
It's the Film Center at Cinema Cafe on St. Michael's.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
I made a mistake. It's the Film Center on... the Santa Fe Film Center. This is a story that I'm surprised has not gotten more coverage. When you think of human rights abuses all over the world and the kind of publicity that they get, this is one that has not really broken through the mainstream media. What's going on with that?
I think a lot of things, just speculation, but I think the Chinese government uses their power behind the scenes a lot. And there's also... A lot of people don't know even what Qigong is, and they don't know what Falun Gong is. So it's taken us a long time to, let the media and the government know what this really is and why it's being persecuted in China. So I think that that's what's taking a little longer to get the word out. And then there's an information blockade in China. They can't even get free information through the internet in China.
Well, I would like to say that this program, the Santa Fe Radio Cafe, is censored in China. You can't access the website, santafe.radiocafe.org.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why.
Right. They completely block the information. It's hard for us to get the information out. Falun Gong practitioners in China risk their life to get their story out, how they were tortured. And from what we've been able to compile, we know that at least 3,000 people have been tortured to death. And we know that it's much, much more, because recently we learned that there's organ harvesting going on in China in secret concentration camps, and there's no record of it. But in the five-year period since the persecution began, there was an increase to 40,000 organ transplants in China, which nothing can account for that number, not even executed criminals. There's a report called Bloody Harvest. If you type in Bloody Harvest into Google, you'll find it by a former Secretary of State of Asia Pacific and a human rights lawyer, David Matus and David Kilgore. They put together this very convincing, evidence showing that this is happening in China. And, it's scary that we don't know what's happening and it's going on. And when I learned about the Holocaust as a child, I thought, how could we have let this happen? You know, but now I feel like the same thing is happening. And it's just so urgent that people learn about it and do something about it.
So what are the goals of the Communist Party in doing this? It's just simply eliminating any threats to their own power?
Yeah. Anything different from communism, they will persecute. You know, and also the lawyer Gao Zhisheng, he's a Christian. And because he write an open letter to Hu Jintao, and now he put into jail. Yeah, can you talk about? Yeah. Okay. Another thing is the vice president of European Parliament, Edward McMillan Scott, he went to China on May 2006. He met two Falun Gong victims in the hotel of Beijing, and he got the first-hand evidence of the organ harvest from the living Falun Gong practitioner. In August, he came to Australia to speak in our parliament and have a forum in three big cities. And he said, because Cao Dong, one of the victims, and because he can't speak for himself, I want to speak to them. After the meeting, two victims, they disappear. Yeah. And also in communism, if the mayor give us proclamation, they will receive the phone call from Chinese embassy and threat.
Yeah, mayors all over the world have given proclamations of different government officials, and they've all been received letters or threatening phone calls asking them not to issue the proclamation. And it opens their eyes. They realize that the Chinese government, you know, tries to extend their power around the world and influence. But
so if the mayor of Santa Fe or Española were to issue a proclamation supporting Falun Gong,
and they have,
they would get a threatening phone call. What do they threaten them with?
Well, I shouldn't have said threatening phone call, but they might tell them some false information, some propaganda about Falun Gong, and ask them not to issue the proclamation. In some cases, the mayor has invited the Chinese embassy to come talk along with some other Falun Gong practitioners, but they were too afraid to. They do things, you know, behind the scenes. And, communism is not Chinese culture. So they've had to constantly re-establish their authority. And the way they operate is that communism has to be number one in people's hearts. And when they're just as young as Fadu, 8 years old, in school they have to pledge their allegiance. And even in Falun Gong, in schools they have to sign petitions or questions on tests saying they're against Falun Gong, even though their grandma might have been healed through the practice. This is just the way the communist, it permeates the society. People have lost their jobs because they practice Falun Gong, because their bosses are made to fire them if they don't quit practicing.
It's unfathomable that something that would lower health care costs and make people happy would, you can see it's not even a political organization.
Right.
It doesn't make sense.
A normal government would be happy to have Falun Gong because it benefits people so much and it benefits the country. You know, a lot of factories, they noticed that when there are a lot of people in China, when a lot of people started practicing Falun Gong, they started making more money because the people started becoming more conscientious and better people coming to work on time and doing their work well, because we follow truthfulness, compassion, tolerance, and try to be the best people as possible.
Mm. So how did you, Xishan, become an activist and start speaking out about this?
When I heard the news, when I arrived in Sydney 3 weeks later, I saw the death news of my husband on the Falun Dafa website, and my hair become gray, white color overnight. I locked myself at home. I don't want to see anyone. I really thank you, Falun Gong teach. He teaches us that we have to think other people first. When I think all my best friends in jail, and the children suffering, and they don't have a chance to speak out, I got a chance. I want to speak out for them. So I carry my daughter, we fly to Geneva. That's the first time I speak out in Human Rights Commission meeting. I call all the mothers in the world to help us to end this persecution. And the independent filmmaker from Sweden, she make this film, Plum Blossom in Snow, she's there when I speak. And she says she's not easy to move, the person. But at that time when I speak, and she break with tears. And she also, Ella, Sarah also there. Can you explain?
Yeah, I went to the Human Rights Commission in that same year and met Jane and Fadi when Fadi was just 2 years old. And I was just so touched by her courage to stand up when she had suffered so much loss. And, you know, just touched by meeting them. And when I got back on the plane, I had a picture of them. And I looked at the picture and just broke into tears. And even now, I think, seeing that they're still doing this, Fadu's already 8 years old, and they've been to over 40 countries to share their message to help other families in China that are suffering. So many children, their parents are in labor camps, and they have to stay with their grandparents or somebody else, and they don't know, you know, why. Why can't they be with their parents? And so much suffering. It's just incredible how many people are suffering because of this persecution. And, you know, now I have a 3-year-old son, and I understand how difficult it is, you know. Even when I'm away from my husband for a little while, I feel that, you know, how difficult it is to raise a child. And it's just so sad what the Chinese government does to its own people.
Now, is this an issue in light of the Olympics? Are you trying to get that awareness out, you know, when the Olympics are in Beijing?
Yeah, to me, I just let people know the truth. It's up to people to choose what to do. People have a right to know the truth. And also, we filed a lawsuit around the world.
Yeah, know, what? Tell us about that lawsuit.
Yeah, take aim at genocide in China. And yeah, I'm one of the plaintiffs because we want to bring this criminal to justice. Yeah.
No, is it against the government of China or one particular?
It's Jiang Zemin because he personally ordered the persecution. Also, we against the 610 office. The head of 610 office is Luo Gan, Li Nanqing.
Now, is the persecution still happening as it was?
Yes. In Australian court, the Supreme Court find guilty for one of Chinese officials called Bo Xilai. I think in America, 4 Chinese officials found guilty by American court. And also our case in Spain is moved on, you know, because Pinochet was arrested. And in 30 July last year, 2007, and the first time for a Spanish judge meet the victim, not Spanish, because with 3 victims is a Falun Gong practitioner. And yeah, now the Spanish justice order to investigate the crime against Falun Gong. So the case is moved on now against Jiang Zemin. Yeah.
Now the lawsuit is one thing, and then there is just the role of the media. To what extent have you been successful in getting media about this issue?
Yes, when we filed the lawsuit, a lot of media came, and the lawyer around the world speak out too. Yeah, and I think this is the biggest lawsuit since Second World War. Yeah, and I'm so happy. Yeah.
Now, how did you, Sarah, get involved in this practice, Falun Gong? It's one thing that I'd never heard of, living in Santa Fe, where there's every practice known to humankind, it seems.
When the persecution started in July 20th, 1999, it became national news for a time, and my father heard about it. He actually was interested because, you know, it combines the mind and the body, you know, improving health and improving the mind and the spirit. And but he also thought that since the Chinese Communist government was against it, there must be something good about it. And so he found a local volunteer practice site nearby, in a nearby city, and asked them to come teach us, my family and I and some of our friends, We learn the practice through them. And Falun Gong is free. It's free of charge, and those of us who have benefited from it, I've benefited a lot with my health from the practice. So I volunteer my time to teach other people, and I teach it at the Wild Oats Community Center every Sunday at 5, from 5 to 6.
And so is there a thriving community in Santa Fe?
We have a group here. We practice out in the Rose Park every Sunday, but the 5 to 6 one is a beginner class, so it's open to everybody.
One of the things that was quite disturbing in the film was that a Chinese delegation went to Finland, and there was a group of Falun Gong practitioners who protested, and they were detained and locked up in anticipation of the visit from the Chinese delegation.
It was actually Iceland.
Iceland.
Okay. Yeah, it because the pressure from the Chinese government, they all the Falun Gong practitioners that went there to appeal during the president's visit were detained in a school. But the Iceland people were very upset that the Iceland government bowed to pressure from the Chinese government.
Has so this kind of thing happened elsewhere?
Yes. Yeah, yes, this is probably the biggest event where the people came out, and how many, 3,000 people protested on behalf of the Falun Gong practitioners, the citizens of Iceland.
Mm. Because they provide a blacklist to the airline.
It's the first time we really knew that they had a very detailed blacklist of Falun Gong practitioners all over the world, which I'm definitely on because I went to China and was arrested because I had a banner that said truthfulness, compassion, tolerance.
You were arrested in China?
Yes, in 2002, I went to China along with 70 other people from around the world to appeal on behalf of those in China who were being persecuted for practicing Falun Gong. And I was arrested before going into Tiananmen Square with a banner. And I was just shocked. People asked me if I was scared, but I was really shocked by the situation. How could I be arrested for something so simple, so peaceful, and so good?
It happens here.
Yeah.
It happens in the United States. People are arrested for wearing an anti-government T-shirt.
Yeah. So I was just, you know, but it opened my eyes, too, because some, you know, I just realized how this persecution, it affects everyone in China, even the guards. They're made to persecute people and believe that they're bad. When we told them Falun Gong's practiced all around the world in 80 countries, and they were so surprised. They thought this was something banned everywhere and it's something bad. And we told them it practiced truthfulness, compassion, tolerance. They didn't know that either. And I was on the bus, and I sang a song called Du Du. And the bus got quiet, and the guard next to me wiped away a tear from his eye. And I asked him to tell his friends and family. And that's just basically what we do, heart to heart.
Do you speak Chinese?
A little bit, yeah.
And so what happened to you? How long were you detained?
I was detained for 24 hours and then deported back to the United States.
Along with some number of other
activists?
All
the people that went there that were deported back to their own countries. And, yeah, Fadi, would you like to sing Dodo with me? Do we have time for a short song?
Okay.
请愿在路。Thank you, Fadu. She's 8 years old now. She loves to sing. And my parents and I also sing songs about the persecution of Falun Gong, which can be found on justicewillprevail.com.
And the film Plum Blossom in Snow, which is about Zhi Xian Dai, and her story is screening at the Film Center on St. Michael's Drive in Santa Fe this Wednesday, the 21st of May, at 6:30 in the evening. So your life now is just on the road?
Yeah, because I know no matter how hard I work, I cannot bring back my husband's life. But I hope through the speak out, I can save thousand people still in labor camp, jail, or unknown place. Because their organ will harvest every minute, their life in danger, another torture. And my best friend Wang Yuqin, she just a kidnapped on 22nd February this year in the name of Olympic. There's more than 1,800 Falun Gong practitioner was arrested for the last 3 months.
So it's still going on, even though there's a different leader in charge. It hasn't changed. Do you see the international pressure making any difference?
I think International Amnesty was well documented what all the case and Human Rights Watch. But I believe the truth, the power of truth. If everybody know the truth, I think things will make difference. Yeah.
Yeah.
Xu Chen Dai and Sarah Effner, thank you so much for being with us here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want to listen to it, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Marilyn LeBlanc for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, the Colors of Jazz. Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte, and we will see you tomorrow. Have a wonderful day. Ciao.